Hello and welcome to a bonus episode of AgTech So What, brought to you by the Agfentic Group. I'm Kirsten DiProse. If regenerative agriculture is going to scale, it needs to be enabled by tech right across the supply chain. In this episode, you'll hear from a panel of venture investors, including Sarah Nollet, who of course usually hosts this podcast. They'll speak about the role of venture capital in regen ag, why the investment cycles are longer, and what drivers are more likely to push companies to source from regen ag farmers. This panel was recorded at a recent Regenerative Food Systems Investment Forum in Oakland, California. And leading the panel discussion is Paul Lightfoot, the president and founder of Bright Farms. So I'll let him take it from here.
Thank you. opportunities. So we bring in the corporate Italian gold fund Australian art fund at AgTech from the Silicon Valley on the trail. And we instead bring the best practices of Silicon Valley to agriculture and the best of agricultural innovation to this entrepreneurial. And so that's where we try to focus. It's not just raising the fee of Silicon Valley, but actually embracing what's
exciting testing, that's what RLP's ended up playing, and Thank you. also one of the things that's a risk of things that can take them is getting the knowledge to consumers and the ingredient buyers of the carbon footprint and the ingredients of things. And right now, it just isn't there. Like, yesterday, I heard some people on the stage say it wasn't possible yet. And this morning, I heard some people say it's completely within the market. So maybe I'll start with you, Mark, and then I'll ask you something. Can we be there soon? Are we there now? How do we get to the point where consumers would be able to look at a refrigerator itself in some market and be able to make first place in the carbon footprint of their food?
That's what we've seen a bit, is that maybe that is a tool to look at as well.
So, recently on 2014, we took some examples.
So, what happened is that the impact was 1.3%. We've done, some close to 5 years, probably 1 million crops have built the soybean plant now up to 2.8%. If you put all that in the newly from the farm, it's just close to 2,000 metric tons of CO2 equivalent. As we've done that, the relative food quality of our alfalfa has gone from about average 162 to our highest 652. So, I'd like to make a case though. And when we get paid from the beef dairy based on the relative feed quality of our alfalfa.
They measure?
Yeah. We send our samples out to Cumberland Valley and Medical Services in Nebraska, and they tell us if our RF2% aggregate score of like carbohydrates, protein, minerals, vitamins, and they pay us for time that. So, I think there's an argument where if you increase the amount of matter, sequestration, higher relative heat quality, nutrient density, I can pay more. The challenge to that is producing this healthier, producing better milk. And again, the consumer ultimately maybe would say, I'll pay more for that. Alexander would be a milk brand well for
if the milk brand is able to carry through the fact
that it's going to come up as that's where our focus is how good can feel that. I
based on the space to one that can be verified. And so things like organic and others
say, what's the leading label going to be that we see in the world? And you can do that.
So, I think the world we have one label is not the world that we live in, right? It's brands, it's experiences, it's influencers, it's marketing, fragmenting, more towards the experiences we're creating, the communities on the table, the brands that it comes from, not the label and its purchase on it. Labels, how you go and it's some of those trends for like there is a good number of trends. Like, I'm sure I think about that on my legs and I'm going to do them. So, I think we'll move away from that.
Well, the challenge is it's that the all natural cereals that we have to do something that's not super authentic, right? And it is really the intended future that we're going to have the cereals that we can have for it. Let's see if we got some interesting questions from the audience. So the question is, what regulatory changes might make this work better or worse? And maybe a way to think about this is if you were used to agreeing what laws would you change in the United States to make all this happen better and faster,
and what would you do better? I guess I didn't go through that. And that's the perspective. We are wary of things that depend on regulatory changes, right? Because the risk profile just increases if we don't have conflicts with the government. I wouldn't make laws that, but what I would say, one trend we're seeing is pressure on the chemical intensity of production, right? So, whether it's glyphosate or other uses of chemicals, we're just seeing lots of regulatory pressure. In some cases, having laws, in other cases, threats. So, fast forwarding the chemical intensity of production is a big investment theme. And so, what we're seeing is that where these stories go, what biology is in mind, right? Like, herbicide resistance is a severe problem, pesticide resistance. Our problem, and so we're actually the government, whatever happens in that space, biology is forcing change. The two of them are in the center, so it's challenging. And the way we're investing is we have to be able to set up, we have to be able to set up the system under the current government headwinds, and should there be a real shift towards tailwinds, we need to be in a position where we can actually start to scale change. And so just kind of building up the tools that could allow farms at scale to change how they're producing is how we're looking at it. But I think we can wait for regulation. We just have to start investing and looking at the space now so that possible time we can get where we have a regulation that actually makes sense.
Yeah, and I know you're talking about your policy being much worse. It's about to get better than where we're at now. I mean, if you look at, like, corn, if the corn can fly in this country, corn is going to be ubiquitous. 40% of that corn goes to the animal food, heavily subsidized to feed corn to cows and pigs. 40% goes to ethanol, heavily subsidized. Arguably, you know, we get less food out of the animal than we all the water required. So, and like, with the electrification of vehicles now, pretty easy to imagine that half the community needs to feed the ethanol. And the remaining 20% goes high from this concept, which is that it's going to be called on the US public, at least for the government diabetes. Hard to imagine it would be worse than that. Every 4 years, we get a manual for a new farm bill. What if we come up with a 50-year strategy? You know, the things that are highly incentivized in order to run your crops, which is a huge growing benefit. So, we'll be better than we know.
One thing we're regulars to expect, but I don't know if that's a good question, but just to throw it out there is, in Australia, we're looking at advocating for an Australian New Zealand moratorium on some of the challenges around autonomous vehicle usage on farm. So, creating the regulatory conditions to say, we will, as government, bear the risk of whatever might happen as we start to roll out autonomy more ubiquitous, and to kind of lay that condition to make that sandbox that you basically come in for the development of good insurance products, the development of good finance products, the development of more technology. So that's the regulatory cover that we would be super excited to see hold for government really to step in and something like that.
Let's end with two quick questions. The first question, which is a good part of the ask, what's the lesson that you made that will remove most greenhouse gases from the atmosphere in 30 seconds or less? You want to start. You start that.
So it's called Bonterra. They're a waste management company that does on-site waste management of organic waste. And for every dollar they make in revenue, waste is burning from landfill and methane to produce.
Great.
real disruption factor is anything that may cost so low that they will actually be able to set up by a reactor's own farm. If you can disrupt the distribution channel for fertilizer, that is a complete game changer. That's the big story.
The biggest matchup to other Earth.
Most of us are not actually on the farm producing. It's just two books that I would recommend that actually really talk about the reality of producing foods. One is called The New Farm by Brent Rusty. He's actually a journalist and his wife's on a farm outside of Toronto, and it's a horticultural operation. And they're looking to supply real food to the communities around Toronto, which is really writes closely about how challenging it has been. And then farm and other efforts by Sarah Mock. She's a producer, actually has worked on farms, so she really kind of goes through different examples of farm enterprises and talks about the real challenges that I think I knew in theory, but she really challenged my thinking around what are we really trying to do and how are we going to get there, what's needed. So those would be two of our recommendations. If you're a podcast listener, you should check out our podcast. It's called Ag Tech So What. But we're seriously, two books I recommend. One, we're talking about how to breed air. It's about the industrial agriculture process and the kind of it. Just the in-depth story of what it actually takes to change the world and how hard it is. The other one is called Never Split the Difference. It's about negotiating. And one of the things that I've learned in kind of moving from the operator side to the industrial side of the table is how important relationships are, and when you're on the other side of the table, that's the feeling of like, we're not in the same boat, we're in the same direction, and I just want to be. So, having the tactics to be able to find an alignment and actually build partnerships has been really helpful for me.
Can you tell me about when you're doing the
And that's it for this bonus episode of Ag Tech So What. Thank you to the panelists, Mark Lewis, Renee Vassilos, Sarah Nollet, and Paul Lightfoot from Bright Farms. Actually, if you enjoyed listening to Paul, he's going to be one of our guests in an upcoming episode. And thank you to the Regenerative Food Systems Investment Forum for the audio. If you'd like to find the links to any of the resources mentioned in this episode, then visit our website, agtechsowhat.com, and that includes the book recommendations. You'll find them there too. Sarah will be back next time. Thank you for listening.